ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ಬಲಾಭ ಗಿರಿಭರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ಬಲಾಭ ಗಿರಿಭರ ಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರಾಭನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರಾಭನ ಚಾರಿ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಗಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶಿಷ್ಯ ಮಾಧಿ ಸಿವಾಯಿ ಗ್ರೇಸೈಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಗಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶಿಷ್ಯ ಮಾಧಿ ಸಿವಾಯಿ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋತಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಇಸ್ಕೊಂ ಫೌಂದರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಶಿಮಂ ಭಾಗವತಂಕಿ ನಿತಾಯಿ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸು ಶಿಶಿ ಗುರು ವಂಶಿ ಗುರಂಗ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಶ್ರೀಮನ್ ಭಾಗವತನ್ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 10 ದ ಸಮನ್ ಬೋನಂ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 24 ವರ್ಷಿಪಿಂಗ್ ಗೋವರ್ಧನ್ ಹಿಲ್ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ನಂಬರ್ 18 ತಸ್ಮತ್ ಸಪುಂಜಯೇತ್ ಕರ್ಮ ಸ್ವಭಾವಸ್ತಾ ಸ್ವಕರ್ಮ ಕೃತ್ ಅಂಜಸಾ ಯೇನ ವರ್ತೇತ ತತ್ ಏವಾಶ್ಯ ದೈವತಂ ತಸ್ಮತ್ ಸಂಪೂಜಯೇತ್ ಕರ್ಮ ಸ್ವಭಾವಸ್ತಾ ಸ್ವಕರ್ಮ ಕೃತ್ ಅಂಜಸಾ ಯೇನ ವರ್ತೇತ tat evasya hyata hidaivatam tasmat sampujajet karma swabhavastasvakarmakrit anjasa jena varteta tat evasya hidaivatam. Please chant. Tasmat sampujajet karma swabhavasta swakarma krit anjasa jena varteta tat evasya hidaivatam. Tasmat, therefore, sampujayet, one should fully worship karma, his prescribed activity, swabhava, in the position corresponding to his own conditioned nature, staha, remaining swakarma, his own prescribed duty, krit, performing anjasa, without difficulty, yena, by which, varteta, one lives, tat, that, eva, certainly, asya, his, he, indeed, daivatam, worshipable deity. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Therefore, one should seriously worship work itself. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his nature and should perform his own duty, indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worshipable deity. Purport. Lord Krishna here proposes the modern, if absurd, philosophy that our work or occupation is really God, and that we should therefore simply worship our work. Upon closer scrutiny, we observe that our work is nothing more than the interaction of the material body with material nature, as Lord Krishna himself states in a more serious mood in the Bhagavad Gita 3:28, guna guneshu vartanta. This verse is the one that says that those who are in knowledge, they don't engage the senses in sense gratification, understanding the difference between working devotion and work for fruitive result. That's, you know, that's what this guna guneshu vartanta. Karma Mimamsa philosophy accepts that good activity in this life will give us a better next life. If this is true, there must be some type of conscious soul different from the body. And if that is the case, why should a transcendental soul worship the interaction of a temporary body with material nature? So, the argument against this philosophy of work is God, or the worship of work is presented, that if we're going to have something better in the afterlife, then it means that there's an eternal soul. And an eternal soul, a transcendental being, what is the use and the meaning of worshiping something that is an interaction of temporary material bodies with a temporary nature. So making that argument that in logic, then it falls apart, this philosophy of karma mimamsa. If the words sampuyajet karma here means that one should worship the laws of karma governing our activities, then one may astutely, that's how you say, astutely ask what it means to worship laws and, indeed, what may be the origin of such laws and who's maintaining them. To say that laws have created and maintaining the world is a meaningless proposition, since there is nothing about the nature of a law that indicates it could generate the existential situation it's supposed to govern. In fact, worship is meant for Krishna himself, and this is a real conclusion that will be clearly revealed in this chapter. So the other refutation here is that the proposal of karma mimamsa is that one should worship the laws of karma. Karma is action. So one worships the law of karma, but the question that one asks is, where is this law coming from? Who's making the laws? Who's maintaining the laws? And who is, making sure that the law is executed? So there is something that is higher than the law. The law is made by some higher intelligence to organize and structure an environment. So then worship of a law, it's meaningless. It's a meaningless proposition because the nature of the law is that is generated by something else, by some higher intelligence, some higher being, or some higher intelligence. So that's the idea. So I read the verse again. Therefore, one should seriously worship work itself. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his nature and should perform his own duty. Indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worship of a deity. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Chapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So we understanding in this part of the pastimes of Krishna that he is talking this philosophy called karma mimamsa. And is quite surprising mysterious in one way, that Krishna is expounding this philosophy, which is denying the supremacy of a personality of Godhead. But as is explained at the conclusion of this purport, that the conclusion of this chapter will fully reveal that it's Krishna, the one who's going to be worshipped, that should be worshipped. So as we go through to the pastime, we see how it unfolds. It's very beautiful. And it is always said that Krishna is very tricky in his pastimes. And in one sense, it's very amazing how by presenting certain things, he establishes the full conclusion of the Vedas. Because he's addressing, in many cases, the type of deviations or tendencies that conditioned souls have to absorb themselves in matters of the world. So you embrace certain philosophies or paradigms that will facilitate that. And Krishna immediately, by presenting these things and at the same time refuting them, then it teaches the proper path. So I wanted to speak a little bit about this karma mimamsa, and the karma mimamsa is one of the, what is called, the term is sat darshanas. The sat darshanas is a six philosophies that study the Vedic conclusion. So these are the six established philosophies. So karma mimamsa is one of them. The six ones are Nyaya, which is logic, Vaisheshika, which is called the atomic theory, Sankhya, which is called the analysis of matter and spirit, Yoga, the disciplines of self-realization, and Karma Mimamsa, the science of fruitive work, and Vedanta, the science of God realization. So these are the six philosophies that basically they accept the authority of the Vedas, and they study the Vedas in depth in different aspects. The term that is used to describe these six philosophies is astika. Asti means it is so. So it is a philosophies that confirm and are based on the understanding that the Veda is the supreme authority. They accept fully the authority of the Vedas. And this is opposed to the philosophies that are called Nastika. Nastika. So we have Astika and we have Nastika. The Astika philosophies, again, accept the Vedas. The Nastika philosophy reject the Vedas. They're called atheistic philosophies, materialistic philosophies, such as Charvaka Muni. He propound these materialistic philosophies that denied everything to the to do with the Vedas. I have it here that it says, read a little bit about, so you get an idea. The school of philosophy of Charvaka Muni, it reject the notion of the afterworld, karma, liberation, the authority of the sacred scriptures, the Vedas, and the immortality of the self. So all these concepts, Vedic concepts, they reject. Another one of the Nashtikas philosophies is Buddhism, and also Jains have, they're considered part of the Nashtika philosophy, who rejects the Vedas in one sense. And then some others. But, you know, but to what we're studying right now, part of these different philosophies, the Ashtika philosophies is the ones that described and in which this karma mimamsa falls in this part of. So all these six philosophies, as I say, accept the Vedas. And Veda, just to describe what is the Vedas, Veda, the term Veda means knowledge. And it's, in one sense, it's like the modern use of science. Because for the modern world, science becomes the authority of knowledge. So everything this modern society accepts as a fact have to be backed up and accepted by science. If it's not proved by science, then it's not authoritatively. So in the Vedas, for the philosophies, for the ancient Vedic culture, the Vedas is the actual authority. So any type of progress that human society will have is all based on the Vedas, on that authority. And for these philosophies, they understand that Vedas is a Purusheya, which means that is beyond is not a human invention. It comes from the transcendental realm. So exists beyond human existence in this material world. It's transcendental knowledge. And therefore, the Vedas are called Shabda Brahma, which means a spiritual sound, transcendental sound. And these Vedas was the special prerogative for Brahmanas to study. The study of the Vedas was basically exclusively for Brahmanas, which is the priestly and intellectual class in society. And then it says that there were four degrees of education of Vedic knowledge. And each one of these four correspond to the four ashrams. So someone is knocking. We know the four ashrams: Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram, so student ashram, where the student level, Brahmachari ashram. Grihastha ashram means the married life. The Vanaprastha ashram, which is when you retire, and the Sannyas ashram, when you renounce the world. So each one of these four degrees of education correspond to this ashram. So the first degrees of learning for brahmacharis was the memorization of the Vedic samhitas, or the hymns of the Vedas, which consists of thousands. It says here 20,000 mantras. And they're divided into four different sections: the Rig, the Sama, the Yajur, and the Atharva Veda. And these are chanted by the priests in glorifications of various aspects of the Supreme Being during rituals. So brahmacharis, they learn the hymns of the Vedas, and they learned how to properly recite. We used to have here one devotee who was trained in the Madhava school in Udupi. What was his name? Mukunda Raghunath. Mukunda Raghunath, as a young boy, he went to the ashram in the Udupi Madhava temple. And you can hear, I mean, he can be for hours reciting verse after verse with the proper meter and all these things. So this is the first degree. You're learning the memorization of the hymns of the Vedas. The second degree of mastery, it is said that is the Brahmana portion of the Vedas that teaches rituals for fulfillment of duties to family, society, demigods, sages, and other living entities, and the Supreme Lord. So now, the second degree is the learning of the performance of rituals and the purpose of rituals. And this is in connection to the ashram, the Grihastha ashram. The Brahmanas in Grihastha ashram, they know how to perform different sacrifices and rituals. The third degree, which corresponds to the renounce, the retire order, the Vanaprastha order, is the mastery of the Aranyaka portion, which basically prepares the retired householder for renunciation, full renunciation. And the fourth degree, which is for sannyasis, the renounce order, is the mastery of the Upanishads, which is the philosophy of the absolute truth for persons who are seeking full liberation from birth and death. According to the Shruti, and all these four different degrees of learning the Vedas, they were considered to be part of that. In other words, this formal system of education, these four degrees, is basically what collectively is called the Shrutis. The Shruti Shastra. So it's a very important terminology to understand the study of the Vedas. So Shruti means that should be heard. So these are the parts of the Vedas that were heard and was transmitted through in that way. It is explained that in previous ages, people were able to capture concepts just by hearing. There was no need. There was such a developed capacity of memorizing that there was no need for written material. They will memorize. But the Shruti Shastras were not. It was not all. Everything of the Vedas, there is also what is called the fifth Veda. So we have four Vedas, the Rig, the Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Veda. The fifth Veda were understood to be the Puranas and the Itihashas. Itihashas means stories. And the Puranas is this literature that will complement the different Vedas. And the beautiful, or the aspect of these Puranas and Itihashas is that they taught the same knowledge of the four Vedas, but through illustrative historical narrations. So, through these histories and narrations, then all this knowledge of the Vedas were taught. And this was something that was available to the lower classes. They were available for non-Brahmanas. So non-Brahmanas could actually study the Puranas and the Itihashas. And these were considered to be what is called the Smriti Shastra. Smriti means that what should be remembered. So we have the Shruti Shastra and we have the Smriti Shastras. And then the Vedas also, the compiler of the Vedas, when the Vedas were compiled by Vyasadev, he produced this Vedanta Sutra that basically it is said that examines all these different approaches to study the Vedas and produces this work that presents all the knowledge of the Vedas in codes. Everything coded. So, and with those codes, he established what is called, and this is, so we have a Smriti Shastra, Shruti Shastra, Smriti Shastra, and now he established with the Vedanta Sutra, this called Nyaya Shastra, which is the basis of, how you say, disputing philosophy to the understand. So with these codes, then you have different philosophies trying to explain this Vedic truth through, how you say, logic. So you approach this different truth and you explain it in such a way. So these are, and so the Vedanta Sutra becomes the springboard of these philosophies, or the initial, how would you say, the initial, the beginning, how would you put it? All these philosophies will be based on the explanation of these Vedanta Sutras, and they will sort of dispute with each other for, in terms of logic on Nyaya, the reason why this philosophy is to be followed. Is that clear in some way? Yeah. So, so then we have these six philosophies again, or six darshanas. So Nyaya, logic, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, Karma Mimamsa, and Vedanta. And each of these philosophies were propounded by the teachings of a particular sage. So Nyaya was propounded by Gautama Muni. Vaisheshika by Kanada Muni. Sankhya by Kapiladev. Yoga by Patanjali. Karma Mimamsa by Jaimini. And Vedanta by Vyas. So, if we to understand a little, in a nutshell, which one of these philosophies propound, and then what you can picture like this: each one of these six philosophies, you can imagine, you can picture that is a different department in a university that study a particular. If you have the department of science in a university, then you have different departments that will be part of that big, part of the education. So you have they complement each other, in other words, but they approach the Vedic knowledge from different perspectives. And so Nyaya, the first one, sets up the rules of philosophical debate and identifies the basics the basic subject under discussion. So what is this basic subject in Nyaya? The physical world, the soul, God, and liberation. So Nyaya sets the rules for debate. Vaisheshika, the next one, engages the method of Nyaya or logic in a deeper analysis of the predicament of material existence by showing that the visible material forms to which we are also attached ultimately break down into invisible atoms. So it's an atomic philosophy. We're not discussing any of this, but you know, but we're going to focus on karma mimamsa a little bit, as time permits. Sankhya, the next one, develops this analytical process further to help the soul become aloof to matter. Through yoga, the soul awakens to its innate spiritual vision to see itself beyond the body. You see that each one of them is going into a particular aspect, and they all complement each other. Karma Mimamsa directs the soul to the goal of Vedic ritualism. And Vedanta focuses on the supreme spiritual goal taught in the Upanishads. So, what we find is that when Kali Yuga, so in Vedic times, this was very complementary. You know, so again, there were different departments of the big faculty of Vedic knowledge, like in a university. And but with the beginning of Kali Yuga, these darshanas or philosophies became divided and contentious. They were starting to clash with each other. And it started to be misinterpreted for selfish ends, you know, like that. So an example of that, and we find that in this history of this Kali Yuga and how different philosophies were established, that it is explained that around 500 BC, this Karma Mimamsa was the most prominent philosophy that was there for the Brahmana class. And because of the degradation of that Brahminical class, this philosophy was used to rationalize this terrible practice of mass slaughter of innocent animals in the name of Vedic sacrifices. It is explained that you still actually, even up to this day, there is areas in India that they still slaughter thousands of animals for this Vedic sacrifice. So this was very prominent during this period of time. There's a thing, there's a place in Nepal or something like that. Have you heard about that? Worship that is done for Kali, in which people bring thousands of animals. They kill thousands of animals. Still happening, you know, to these days. So anyway, this was happening very, very much during this period of time, and everything was stopped when this new religion or philosophy that was non-Vedic challenged the power of the Karma Mimamsa, and that was the Buddhism, the Buddhist religion. And eventually, the Buddhist religion basically diminished or weakened this karma mimamsa, and eventually was established, especially by the influence of this powerful king, King Ashok, was established as the religion of the empire, the Buddhists. The Buddhists, like we say before, it was a Nashtika philosophy, which means they didn't accept the authority of the Vedas. It was a specifically designed like that by Lord Buddha in order to stop the influence of these deviations of Vedic philosophy by the Karma Mimamsa. Then he declined, he said, no authority of the Vedas, and there is no God, and there is no soul, everything is nothing. So, and focus on these two things, ahimsa, non-violence, and sunyata, voidism. So you have these two concepts that were main concepts of Buddhist philosophy. Buddhist philosophy later was eclipsed by Shankaracharya, who again established the authority of the Vedas. So, but the formulation of Vedanta philosophy from Shankaracharya was basically influenced by Buddhism. So it was not really representative of the original Vedanta philosophy taught by Vyasadev, you know. So it was basically Buddhism, but within the frame of Vedic philosophy. And then it came these great acharyas, Ramanuja, Madhavacharya, and eventually Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that basically established in succession the perfect understanding of Vedanta philosophy. Sort of refute this philosophy of Ramanujacharya, and that is basically crypto Buddhism, you know, like that, you know, or disguised Buddhism, Shankaracharya. So Mahaprabhu established this philosophy of Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, simultaneously ones and difference, as the perfect Vedic understanding. So all these six philosophies, they have, because they accept the authority of the Vedas, the six darshanas, they have very common principles that govern them. And these are described also in this study. These are some of the things that are common on the six philosophies. The self is understood to be an individual spiritual being of the nature of eternal consciousness. All the six philosophies accept. The self acquires a succession of physical bodies through reincarnation under the law of karma. The self suffers because of its contact with matter. The end of suffering is the goal of philosophy. A person who adheres to any of these of the six systems observes the same sadhana. Sadhana means spiritual practices, as the followers of other systems. So all the systems they accept that in order to become purified and to elevate oneself, to control oneself, this sadhana becomes the foundation of Brahminical culture. So they all accept that, and one have to. So to understand now, specifically karma mimamsa, because what Krishna is speaking here is this philosophy, in order to induce the inhabitants of Vrindavan to reject this sacrifice that it was going to be for the pleasure of Lord Indra, the king of heaven. And he started to present this karma mimamsa. So what is karma mimamsa? What is the philosophy of karma mimamsa? So here are some descriptions of what is karma mimamsa I read. It's very interesting. And you can find traces of that, you know, from especially in India, you find a lot of traces of this karma mimamsa. The word karma refers to any action that results in reaction, whether good or bad. The word mimamsa means to analyze and understand thoroughly. The philosophical system of karma mimamsa and Vedanta are closely related to each other and are in some ways complementary. Karma mimamsa may be understood as a stepping stone to Vedanta. Remember, Vedanta is about understanding the absolute truth and how to become free from this material world. So karma mimamsa may be understood as a stepping stone to Vedanta. He examines the teachings of the Vedas in the light of karmakanda rituals, whereas Vedanta examines the same teachings in the light of transcendental knowledge. The karma mimamsa system is called Purva Mimamsa, which means the earlier study of the Veda, and Vedanta is called Uttara Mimamsa, which means the later study of the Veda. Karma mimamsa is to be taken up by householders, and Vedanta is reserved for wise men who have graduated from household life and taken up to the renounced order, sannyas. So this is from the perspective of karma mimamsa. And this is not what Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita. But it is presented in the Vedas, because the Vedas, the paradigm of the Vedas is within this structure of a social system that was fully in tune with the natural progression of consciousness that was the goal. So when you have a society that is fully focused on elevating consciousness, so this system that was called the yoga ladder was established. Now, what Krishna presents in the Bhagavad Gita is tailored to a society that it goes to the principle that could be applicable in a place in which there is not a Vedic social structure, meaning for Kali Yuga. So Krishna is giving us a system that will allow us to have the same result in a society that is not conducive to elevation of consciousness. So karma mimamsa, according to karma mimamsa, or these karmakanda rituals, that's for the householders. And Vedanta is when you become a sannyas, you retire, the last stage. The main goal of karma mimamsa philosophy is to provide a practical methodology for the utilization of the Vedic religion, dharma, for the satisfaction of the urges of wealth, artha, and sensual pleasure, kama. In so doing, Karma Mimamsa provides a materialistic explanation of the Vedic rituals for persons whose material desires have blinded them to spiritual understanding. So, understanding this, attached people who are actually desiring to enjoy this body and this, to enjoy through the senses this material body, then, and they're blinded to their spiritual self and their spiritual interests, then this system is given for them to gradually elevate themselves. So the system of Karma Mimamsa facilitates that. So it is bona fide, and it is within the context of that Vedic structure, that yoga ladder, then is very useful. Then, in the Veda, numerous gods and goddesses are invoked. The Karma Mimamsa system interprets these deities and their worship in terms of highly human-centered rather than God-centered rational. So, the deities, the worship of devatas and the worship of the personality of Godhead is, or these rituals, is all human-centered, is not God-centered. So we have also materialistic societies, they're human-centered, there's not God-centered. So you have individuals being centers of things like that. Therefore, Karma Mimamsa presents the Vedic religions as a science of mechanistic principles and not as a faith of adoration of divinities aimed at receiving benediction from on high. Vedic Dharma is justified to materialists as being useful to humanity in that it can satisfy human worldly desires in this life and in the next when properly executed. And proper execution of Vedic Dharma requires karma yoga or selfless adherence to duty. So, in other words, this arrange or this karma kanda session is designed to engage very materialistic people to follow a process of religion, a process of dharma, of duty. And with that embracement of duty, they elevate themselves gradually to other stages, a higher stage of consciousness. So there's explanation of the concept of duty according to Karma Mimamsa. Many people are very concerned about their rights, but little aware of their duties. Unless one knows what one's duties are, he cannot understand what his rights are. Demanding rights without accepting duty leads to many problems, evident by today's chaotic global society. So we have the Bill of Rights. Everybody, what is my right? The right to be happy, the pursuit of happiness. We have that in our constitution in this country. The right for bear arms, all these rights. But there is less emphasis on what is our sacred duties in society, and that to fully understand that. So demanding rights without accepting duty leads to chaotic society. Duty may be defined, so again Karma Mimamsa, duty may be defined as a tradition of responsibility incumbent upon human beings everywhere that ultimately have divine origin. It is because of the law of duty that the family, society, the nation, and the entire universe continue to exist. The execution of duty handed down by higher authority is the path of honor in all human cultures. Conversely, the path of dishonor is the neglect of duty for the satisfaction of animal urges. History teaches that when the family, society, and nation fail to fulfill traditional duties and instead follow the whims of lust and their own value system, they are soon destroyed. The term Dharma is variously translated as virtue, duty, morality, righteousness, or religion. But no single English word conveys the whole meaning of Dharma. So Dharma is much more profound. But from the perspective of Karma Mimamsa, here's here's how they accept Dharma as a something to be seen as supreme, you know. So the action, performing these actions, when one performs Dharma, one is secure to receive the result of Dharma. So Dharma or action, according to this, or good action, which is Dharma, is the cause of all results. Does that make sense? You know, all results are derived from this good action, this dharmic action. So therefore, this dharmic action is God, is supreme. That's the whole idea. So here's some more very interesting points. Time is passing. Okay, I keep reading. Ritualism, illumined by philosophy, gives one's awareness of the deep significance of even the small duties of life. For example, a morning ritual of a working man. So this is something, how this part of this Karma Mimamsa that focus on dharmic action for obtaining the result of economic development and sense gratification for materialistic people, materialistic, absurd people. But according to accepting this divine laws of Dharma. So they present this, that this philosophy, understanding the Vedic philosophy, will give you a very deep awareness of everything you do. Everything has this very deep value. And if you don't have this philosophy, then you be basically, there's very little connection to the things that you do. So here's an example. A morning ritual of a working man. He awakens early, goes to the toilet, brushes his teeth, washes his face, shaves, takes a shower, dresses, and finally eats breakfast. These are insignificant, you know, sort of like you don't think about this thing, you just do it. He does none of this with any sense of consecration. His actions have no higher end or aim than simply to reach the office at exactly 9 o'clock. As a result, he does not experience any particular fulfillment from the activities he performs from the bathroom to breakfast. His whole life rotates through a mechanical framework because of his mundane view of existence. But viewing the daily, unexceptional routines of life as rituals linked to the cycles of the cosmos helps expand the consciousness beyond the shallowness of a workday life. In short, a ritual is a meditation. When a Brahmana makes breakfast as an offering or oblation to the fire of digestion within, remembering that the same cosmic principle of fiery energy burns within the bellies of all creatures and within the sun and electricity and the sacrificial fire, then the whole process is transformed, although the activities are the same as always. It's very beautiful. So every little thing, as insignificant as eating, you know, as regular, you would think, you know, you eat, but how this whole thing is processed and how everything is connected, you know, for a higher principle of an offering, or, you know, recognizing the fire, you're actually doing a sacrifice. You're putting food into a fire that is in the stomach. So, you know, it's a meditation. And everything has this very elevating process. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed. So here's the thing with Karma Mimamsa now, which is not accepted by the Vedic philosophy, by Vedanta philosophy. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed not to worship or please any deity, but simply because the Veda commands one to perform them. Those rituals are practiced for the sake of duty. Food is cooked, and through the use of mantra, the cosmic deity, Mahapurush, in whom the demigods and all beings dwell, is invited to partake of the food and grant blessings in return. But the offering is not made as an act of devotion. Rather, the Karma Mimamsa believe the Mahapurush is obliged by the ritual to accept the offering and give benediction. So here's the point of the Karma Mimamsa that is not accepted in Vedanta philosophy. Mastery of the ritual is the mastery of the powers of the universe. So this work or this performance of duty becomes the element that controls all the whole elements of the universe. And that's not accepted. By proper execution of rituals, the performer expects to enjoy prosperity on earth and be promoted to heaven, higher planets within the universe, where the standard of sensual happiness is much superior to earth. The Karma Mimamsa system teaches that one can cut one's own poisonous plan of past bad karma with the powerful axe of present good karma in the form of the performance of Vedic rituals. Karma Mimamsa identifies two purposes of rituals: to obtain and expand one's own inner potential and united with the cosmic force, and pay respects and show gratitude to the cosmic forces that are constantly supplying light and life to all sentient beings. I know it's getting late, but this is... I have notes here of how Karma Mimamsa also understand the concept of the soul from Karma Mimamsa perspective, and also how Vyasadeva refutes. Remember that there is this nyaya, which is a refutation, this, how you say, when two philosophies, they have this refutation, this argument, to establish, you know, what's the supremacy of a particular philosophy. So how Srila Vyasadeva refutes some of these concepts. So here's the conception of the soul. Karma Mimamsa does not pursue metaphysics, but instead emphasize on the practical approach of karma yoga, or yoga of action. Rituals have three components: the performer, the object of the action, and the process of performing it. The main doctrine of karma yoga is, as you sow, you shall reap. Accordingly, one is the master of his own destiny and is free to enjoy his karma as either master or slave. Common concept. This concept that, you know, that man is a master of his destiny. You know, you become what you want to become accordingly to your you know, desires. And therefore, you could be the master or the slave of your karma. Karma Mimamsa considers the soul to be an eternal, infinite substance with the capacity for consciousness. So this is, as we say, through all the philosophies, they accept this. Implicit in the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is the belief that the soul is meant to enjoy matter. This is one of the things that is not accepted in Vedanta philosophy. The soul perfection is attained to perfectly follow karma kanda, process by which all enjoyable things within this universe may be realized. So here's to conclude some of the refutations that Srila Vyasadeva does. So we have this point that karma alone awards the fruits of the performance of Vedic rituals, because after an act is complete, then it is an obligation of the universe, of whatever is there, the deities of the universe, to fulfill that. They're obliged. And this is what Krishna is making this point, that why you worship it Indra, you do your good work, he's obliged. You don't have to do a worship. He's obliged to do, to fulfill his duty. His duty is to give you the result of your good actions. So, so Srila Vyasadeva, well, Karma Mimamsa concludes that it is wrong to think that karma is rewarded by God. Dharma comes from the Lord, karma comes from the Lord, but the fruit comes from karma itself. So this is the conclusion. So Vyasadeva refused this. Badarayana Vyas gives his replies to this in Vedanta Sutra 3.2.42. Purvantu Badarayanaha Hetu Vyapadeshat. Quote, but Badarayan holds that the Supreme Lord is the bestower of rewards, because that is the Vedic, that is the version of the Vedic scriptures. The Lord is proclaimed in the scriptures as the cause of all causes. Therefore, it is unintelligent to isolate apurva. Apurva means that the energy that creates, you know, good work. So it's unintelligent to think that the result of good work is the cause of the fruit of rewards. Apurva is given no such credits in the scripture. And if it is argued that the demigods are the giver of karmic results, of the karmic fruits, and therefore the Lord himself need not to be dragged down to their level of being mere order supplier, the reply is that the Lord is the indwelling ruler of all these inferior demigods. They punish or reward only as he impels them to do within. So the demigods are not independent either. They do the words or punishment according to the order and the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the conclusion of the Vedas. So it refutes this concept that karma or good action or karma is the one who's gonna give the result independently. It's refuted. And here's another one. This is in terms, karma mimamsa, in terms of cultivation of knowledge. Jaimini's objection to the cultivation of Brahma Vidya, knowledge of Brahman, as recommended in the Upanishads. He says that Vidya is subordinate to karma. Indeed, whatever glory is given to Vidya, purification, elevation, and liberation is really the result of the performance of Vedic Karmakanda rituals. So he says that by the performance of Karmakanda, then one gets Vidya. So Vidya really is subsidiary to the performance of karma. Karma is the karma kanda will be the reigning principle. Worship of Vishnu is also accomplished only by karma. The passages in the Vedas recommending renunciation, sannyas, apply to the enfeebled, blind, and crippled persons who are unable to perform rituals. In the Shastras, it is seen in the Shastras that the best among the learned and wise men of all used to perform karma. In fact, there are direct Shastric statements declaring that Vidya is but an aspect of karma. The Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad says, when a man dies, his vidya and karma take hold of him and carry him to his next destination. Therefore, since vidya cooperates with karma to jiva's result, it is subordinate. Shastra directs persons having vidya to perform karma. Therefore, also, vidya is subordinate to karma. There is also an injunction directing persons to perform a scriptural authorized karma through his whole life. Therefore, vidya is to be cultivated through karma. Not karma is to be renounced so that vidya may be cultivated. So this is the Karma Mimamsa presentation. So now Srila Vyasadeva refuse this by saying, it is true that vidya is cultivated by karma, but it is not true that therefore karma is greater than vidya. Vidya is the goal of karma. So this is the point. Vidya is the goal of karma. When the end is accomplished, the means is no longer required. So when one achieves transcendental knowledge, the means of working and performing prescribed duties is not needed, so therefore one can actually renounce the prescribed duties, the world. And that's the position of sannyas, or karma sannyas. And that's Krishna explains in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that to get to that point, you have to be perfectly free from desires and attachments in this world. Some authorities like Janaka continue karma after obtaining vidya solely for the benefit of mankind. Krishna also quotes Janaka Maharaj in the Bhagavad Gita that he is a perfected being, but he still performs his duty for the benefit of leading society. But many great sages, Yajñavalkya and Kavaseyas, abandon karma and retire to the forest to devote themselves to vidya alone. Regarding Vedic statements that vidya is just an aspect of karma, these do not refer to the Brahma vidya, but to a specific vidyas related to a specific rituals. So there are certain Vedic statements in which Karma Mimamsa is basing their argument that vidya is an aspect of karma, but Srila Vyasa correct that by saying that it's a specific aspects of vidya that refers to karma, but that is related to rituals. So it's specific to a particular rituals, but it's not the general thing. Regarding the statements that vidya and karma cooperates to yield results, these are like the statements of, I saw a cow and a goat and received 100 coins. So you cannot put the two on the same. So you have a goat and you have a cow. The cow is very valuable, the goat is not very valuable. So you can say, you know, I sold both and I get 100 coins. You can assume, well, you know, one is the equal, or the goat is greater to the cow, you know, like that. But no. This means that 90 coins were received for the valuable cow and only 10 coins were received for the non-so-valuable goat. Similarly, though both the fruits of vidya and karma accrue at the time of death, they're not the same fruit. They're not are they two fruits of equal value. The value of vidya is much greater. The statement from the Taittiriya Upanishad that directs one in knowledge to perform karma is addressed to the Brahma Nishta. So, Karma Mimamsa also based on these quotes from the Upanishads that directs one in knowledge to perform karma. So the idea that if you have vidya, you have to perform karma. You can't, you know, because vidya is basically subordinate to karma. So Srila Vyasadeva says that this is addressed to a particular position that is called Brahmanishta. So what is this Brahmanishta? He who is well versed in the Veda. But a Brahmanishta is merely a Shabda Jnani, a knower of words. He is not a Brahmabit, a knower of Brahman, God. So it's a difference between Brahmanishta and Brahmabit. The Brahmanishta is someone who has knowledge of the Vedas, but not necessarily is the knower of Brahman. He doesn't have the realized knowledge. They still have to work on that realization. It's called, you have Jnana and you have Vijnana. So the Brahmanishta have Jnana, but the Brahmavid has Vijnana, understanding of Brahman. A Brahmavid is an Upashaka, enlightened devotee, and his vidya is anubhava, consciousness of intense joy. The difference between a brahmanishta and a brahmabid is like the difference between one who says honey is sweet and the one who tastes the honey. The one who tastes honey. A brahmabid is a naishkarmi. He does not perform rituals. He engages in transcendental acts of pure devotion to Lord Vishnu. The claim that puja to Lord Vishnu is merely karma is hereby refuted. So the brahmabid, when he acts, is for devotion to the Lord. The statement directing a person to perform karma through his life is a non-specific recommendation. It does not apply to everyone. And even when it does apply, is meant as glorification of vidya, because by vidya, a person is safe from the binding effects of karma, even though he continues to perform karma through his whole life. It's the whole teachings of Bhagavad Gita, that if you perform your actions as a sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord, then you become free from the binding force that is there to actions. So you actually become free from the reactions of karma when you do that. So therefore, a person, a devotee, a brahmabid, is called a naishkarmi, which is that you're not performing, you're not binded by the result of karma. So it's like not performing karma. For example, a saintly devotee retains his body, the vehicle of active or prarabha karma, to spread the glories of the Lord throughout the world. But in this embodied activity, he is liberated. So this is a refutation of Vyasadev. Way past time. Sorry. I hope you found it, sort of interesting. I find it, very fascinating and also assuring that we're very fortunate to receive these Vedic teachings in the cyclic succession through the grace of Srila Prabhupada. And our Vaishnava Acharyas, we connected to this line that teaches, the proper path to understand how to, have a very successful pursuit of the goal of life, which is self-realization. Wonder, we should stop. If there is any questions, then we can do it offline, because I took too much time for the class. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai.